Last week, I took a trip, the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture, to tour the museum's current exhibit, For Whom It Stands, The Flag and the American People. I walked around with curators and artists who were featured in the exhibit, and we discussed the many ways people have interpreted, remixed, and interacted with the American flag throughout history. Before beginning to walk around the exhibition, I spoke with assistant curator For Whom It Stands, Asantewa Boakua. Explain to us where we are. What are we about to kind of see and hear here?
What you will see and hear are an array of art and artifacts that deal with how Americans have interpreted the flag over time. So the intent is to look at the multiple and diverse perspectives visually and how artists, military veterans, other groups have used the flag, not only for their own maybe political purposes, but also visually and culturally, and how that is a part of their experience in the country.
So we're in this time when Baltimore's and the governor's losing their minds over the War of 1812. So celebrations are everywhere. And it was a very complex time. But I mean, I'm very curious about the response of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum and why this exhibit occurred. I mean, what made this bubble up, both kind of culturally, artistically, politically, socially? Why did you do this?
The curator of the exhibition is Dr. Michelle Joan Wilkinson, who's a scholar of flag art. And in her work, she unearthed, at least from the curatorial perspective, the story of Grace Wisher, who was an African-American indentured servant, 13 years old, during the War of 1812. She lived in the home of Mary Pickersgill and helped to sew the Star-Spangled Banner flag. So this story, or just the minute, small portion that we know about Grace Wisher, this, that she was there, she was indentured, but the idea that an African-American young woman helped to create this iconic symbol is something that we feel charged as the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African-American History and Culture to help bring that story out and bring attention to her role. But not only that, but to use that as a touch point to explore other untold stories, other artists, other people who have used the flag and engaged it in ways that are powerful and meaningful to them and their communities. So that's the touch point. And obviously, it's the 200th anniversary. So this was the perfect timing for us.
Renowned beatbox and multimedia artist Shotika, who curated the audio installation For Whom It Stands, told us about the significance of the national anthem and how people have interacted with it sometimes in ways that some might see subversive to a traditional American tradition throughout American history. What's your role in this exhibit?
My role was to act as the musical curator and musical researcher of the exhibit. And my task was to uncover culturally alternative versions, variations of the Star-Spangled Banner, the anthem, if you will, and organize this consolidated selection of different versions in the sound installation. That's in the back here, further into the exhibit. I chose 15 different versions of the Star-Spangled Banner, paying numerical tribute to the Stars and Stripes, the 15 that were sewn into the flag by Mary Pickersgill at the flag house next door, and have everything from Ethel Ennis's contribution to the song's legacy, Jimi Hendrix's Renee Marie with her version of Lift Every Voice and Sing, sung to the tune of the Star-Spangled Banner, and so on. And I really tried to basically push the conversation beyond the mythological understanding of the Star-Spangled Banner. I really wanted to go beyond the mythology. And
what do you mean by the mythology?
Well, usually I think the anthem is presented in a very standard way, paying patriotic tribute to the idea and the ideologies of the flag, the song, the United States of America. I chose to use this research as a way to get beyond the fabric of a mythologized understanding of the song's history. Like, for example, great example of getting beyond the mythology of the Star-Spangled Banner was I uncovered a list of police ordinances, Baltimore City police ordinances that state how you are to observe and play the Star-Spangled Banner in Baltimore City limits. These were instituted before the song even became the national anthem in 1931. Like, for example, it states that you are to remain standing. Once you start it, you must finish it. You can't fuse it or synthesize it with other songs or anthems. There's an ordinance that states specifically that you're never to dance to it. Yeah, this was a way to kind of go beyond what's standardly known regarding the anthem and so on.
So the woman who did the piece you were describing, Lift Every Voice and Sing, sung to the national anthem, her name was?
Renee Marie.
Rene Marie.
Yeah.
So Rene Marie and Jimi Hendrix broke that law.
Well, they weren't in Baltimore City.
I know that.
Right. But, I mean, I think actually there's an interesting story of Stravinsky, who presented a different arrangement of the Star Spangled Banner in Boston. There's some historical debate as to what really happened, but I know for a fact that at least the Boston police commissioner showed up, and one story goes that he confiscated the sheet music. Another story goes that Stravinsky was actually arrested and held captive for what he did in Boston.
The Grace Wisher piece is really kind of fascinating to me. I mean, especially the juxtaposition between Grace Wisher being a young black indentured servant and Francis Scott Key penning the Star-Spangled Banner, who was a slave owner and who was pro-slavery, even though when he was district attorney of D.C., he defended some freedmen. He was a major force in being the pro-slavery movement. So that's a...
Yeah, it's a powerful story, and we have on view a fragment from the actual Star-Spangled Banner flag on loan from our wonderful neighbors, the Star-Spangled Banner Flag House and Museum.
That was Assistant Curator Asantewa Boakua.
Back to your question of why it's important as well for us, the Star-Spangled Banner was sewn immediately next door. And if you think about also the outside of the museum is a site where it's a major, we all know Baltimore City is a major port for enslaved people coming in. So all of these sort of historical sites mixing and to uncover the story of Grace Wisher and to have the actual fragment give sort of the visual importance of recognition at least to her contribution.
Baltimore's port was like the place where they traded and sold slaves between here and the Caribbean and moved them south and from here, right?
Exactly.
Right.
And the marker is right out front of our doors. So to think about in that time, we also do have this story of this indentured servant, right? So I think it also gives breath to African-American experience in a broader lens. The show is organized chronologically. We start with the founding of the nation, Revolutionary War, and we have on view a painting by the contemporary artist Carrie James Marshall. The image is entitled Bang, and it's a image of three African-American children saluting the American flag. One girl is holding the flag. There are hoses around the young children's feet. And in the background of the painting, there's a banner that invokes sort of revolutionary language fighting against tyranny. The painting invokes, with the hoses and the young children, the riots of Birmingham during the 1960s. And so we open the show with this painting because of its visual sort of impact that is layered all of these historical periods in one. So we use that to start the show. We have on loan from the Maryland Historical Society these graphic sheet music that portray the flag. So we know that there were numerous patriotic songs beyond the Star-Spangled Banner. So we have that on view for the Civil War period. We move through World War I, World War II, showing different military parades with the flag, even African-American jockeys in flag apparel, which we think about in contemporary times is a very popular thing. But we wanted to highlight what was going on in the late 1800s with African-American jockeys. We moved through to World War II and propaganda posters for the war. We have a sheet of flag protocol, which I think maybe in our 21st century mind is easy to forget. There are certain ways the flag is supposed to be displayed during different holidays, different times of day. And then one of the highlights of this section is a photograph from the Library of Congress that shows an African-American young woman inspecting flags at the Quartermaster's Depot in Philadelphia. We like to think of this as the contemporary Grace Wisher, right? We know Grace Wisher existed. There's no visual record of her, right? We have this visual record of this young African-American girl. We don't know her name. There's no other identifying information about her that we could find. So we imagine perhaps this is more common than we think, right? This participation by all Americans, and African Americans are a part of that, in sort of the making, creation, and then iconization of the flag. That's an important piece for us, yeah. We start to look at, as the show progresses, seminal photographs for the decade, starting in the 1940s and moving through to the 2000s. Many people are familiar with the photograph American Gothic by Gordon Parks, the African-American photographer, who portrayed a government tent. Cleaning woman named Ella Watson holding a broom and a mop in front of the flag. What we haven't seen as much, though, are these shots of Ella Watson's life in Washington, D.C. Who was this woman in this iconic photograph? And what was her role? Well, we see that she lived in a walk-up in Northwest Washington, D.C. She had grandchildren, three that we know, and a daughter who all live with her in a small apartment. And if you take a look at the label we have for her, she survives on her salary of $1,080 per year with these four individuals living with her. So we wanted to show what's behind the icon, in this case, Gordon Park's iconic photograph. Another key image is that of Jasper Johns in his studio with his famous painting Flag that he created or began creating in the 50s. Jasper Johns is important to this story, as Dr. Wilkinson's research uncovered. When we talk about flag art, right, and we talk about what changed or why this artist is important, he was one of the first to depict the flag with non-traditional materials in a not unconventional way. So that plays with the whole idea of manipulating the flag, taking the flag into one's own interpretation. And then you think about the era that he was working in McCarthyism in the 1950s and that whole thing, how, for lack of a better word, revolutionary that could be seen in the vein of, you know, when you think about art history and what flag art, how it's progressed since then. We have images from the 60s by the photographer Bruce Davidson, Selma to Montgomery March. Again, a visual example of how the flag is used as a political tool for voting rights in this case, but in the 1970s, we see in Boston images by the photographer Stanley Forman, where a citizen is using the flag apparently as a weapon. And this is.
He was using it as a weapon.
But there's quite debate, right? There is debate around this photograph, he was not the man who's jumping back may not have been in a target, but just happened to be in the way. But these things, you know. Yeah, but we have to understand the debate. But clearly, visual.
If you look at the photograph, I know this photograph. I remember this all happened. The debates we had about this. This was when the busboys,
exactly,
Busing kids in Boston. He was being held back by the other man in the photo, holding him back. This guy was about to pummel him with the flag in the stomach, which he actually did. I mean, using the flag as a weapon. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I love the juxtaposition of this, because I remember this photograph is iconic. You just talked about, mm-hmm, about the Selma and that flag, and then this piece is just beautiful.
Ashton Harris, 1987, Miss America. So we see this as an African-American woman in white face with the United States flag draped.
Right.
Yes. And this conjures up notions of beauty. Who defines that? What is American beauty, if we can use that term? Sort of the objectification of black bodies. This image is a very powerful one. Small, but says a lot visually.
Yeah. I love this piece. Yeah. On election night when Barack Obama was first elected. This picture, this photo of this young man wrapped in a flag, this blissful look on his face at 13th and U in D.C.
Yes. Yeah. Historically black neighborhood. Yeah.
Or it was anyway.
Well, yes. The keyword, historically. It's a historically black neighborhood.
I mean, the SNCC headquarters were around the corner in the 60s from this street, and now that's been a gentrified neighborhood. I mean, it's amazing how what's happened. But
So
when you have people walk through here, mm-hmm, I know at museum you're not saying what people should walk out with. What do you think people have walked out with? I mean, because you have these pieces in here, the American flag is a straitjacket hanging down, which just, I love that piece. And all these kind of very complex pieces, because it's all about the complexities of what the flag means and its beauty and the evil things done under it. And
we hope, or at least what I have experienced in the public's reaction after walking through the exhibit, is they were changed in some way. You know, they may have come with a notion about what they thought the flag meant to them, you know, but they were exposed to a variety of different interpretations of the flag. I mean, I think a key example of that is Sheila P. Bright's installation, which is outside of the orientation artwork. And she talks about, in photographing those people, how some of the baby boom generation, for example, were, I love the flag, it's wonderful, America is great, right? But then you have other generations who put the flag over their head and they don't want to be seen because they feel like the policies or some of the actions of the United States government and actions that have been done in the name of United States citizens with the flag leading that visually is not something that they are proud of. So understanding that the nation is complex, you know, understanding that though a flag's meanings are assigned or dictated, the way that the people feel about it, the way that the people interpret it, can be as vast as we can imagine. And there are a number of artists who speak to that.
That was assistant curator Asantewa Boakua. We have to take a very brief break, but when we come back, we'll hear more of my tour of For Whom It Stands, The Flag and the American People, now exhibited at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. On Our Way to Break, And That's Where the Love Is, by Roberta Flack and Dottie Hathaway, one of the finest songs ever. That song was certified gold on this day in 1972. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's House of the Rising Sun by The Animals. On this day in 1964, The Animals started a three-week run at number one on the U.S. charts with House of the Rising Sun. This hour, we're taking a tour to the Reginald F. Lewis Museum in their current exhibition, For Whom It Stands, The Flag and the American People. Back to that conversation.
Faith Ringgold, another key artist in the history of flag art, in 1970 organized a show in New York called the People's Flag Show along with other artists. And the poster she created for that show is the United States flag.
That was assistant curator Asantewa Boakua.
And she uses the stripes as words. So they say the American people are the only people who can interpret the American flag. The American people are the only people who can interpret the American flag. A flag which does not belong to the people to do with as they see fit should be burned and forgotten. Artists, workers, students, women, third world peoples, you are oppressed. What does this flag mean to you? Join the people's answer to the repressive U.S. government and state laws restricting our use and display of the flag. And for this show, which was held at Judson Memorial Church, she was jailed along with two other artists who were dubbed the Judson Three. And this is 1970, so we're not talking about 1870, okay? We're talking in contemporary times where American citizens have been jailed for expressing the way they feel about the flag. So at least the hope is that visitors will come out and be educated about the flag itself and how it's been used, but also that they will also think about it for themselves and what it means to them.
I like that. I remember that when she was arrested.
But that was a period of time when people, the flag was in the middle of a giant controversy because of the Vietnam War, because of the Panthers and the civil, and the movement and how people use the flag and wearing it and not doing it the way you're supposed to do it and and all the rest. You know, I think that... this is a lovely, interesting piece.
Yeah, Cliff Joseph, again, speaking on how Americans may have been led blindly into political conflicts. This is a depiction of citizens blindfolded with the flag upside down, and the flag that's pictured on a flagpole is upside down.
Which means distress.
Exactly. And the in the foreground are, the ground is made of skeletons and bombs. So we see a clear commentary on war, on how the flag may be used, and how patriotism, in quotation marks, may be used to carry on conflicts in the name of the people who may be totally unaware of what is happening.
This whole wall here of how people in our modern world are using the flag is amazing.
It's,
Because a lot of the stuff you see in these pictures, people dancing on the flag, sitting on the flag on the beach, wearing it. I mean, these were all things that were totally supposed to be unpatriotic.
Exactly.
At some point, right? It,
yeah.
It was like standing on its head.
And this section focuses on three contemporary photographers. So we have Radcliffe Roy out of New York, who created a whole series with young people in the streets of New York wearing flag apparel. Lori Lyons, who's pictured here in the center, traveled the country and photographed Americans with the flag and documented their statement. So you'll see small personal notes from each of the subjects photographed. So we have a picture of American Indians in Montana with the flag, a young guy in Brooklyn, Latino man on the beach in Miami, Florida. And then we have Sheila Pree Bright, who did a project called Young Americans, where she photographed young people, Generation Y, 18 to 25 was her target, with the flag. So we have someone who's from West Africa draping the flag in a traditional way around her body.
Traditional African way.
West African way. Yes, traditional West African way. And then we have a young man tying his hands with the flag, like they're handcuffed, like he's restricted. So this is a major sort of view of what the people have done with the flag, right?
I have an American flag in my study on the wall. And the flag, the reason I have it on the wall was the contradictions of the flag. We're leaving my daughter's house one day, and my buddy who's with me was from Wyoming, Sean Ware, who's Kiowa, married to a Shoshone Arapaho woman who lives in the reservation in Wyoming. And their family was visiting us, and so we were hanging out. We were driving. It was winter. We cut around to Northern Parkway, and then Sean looked over and went, "Make a U-turn, quick." I said, "What? What are you talking about? Make a U-turn." And so I said, "What? It's a flag. It's in the snow." So we make this U-turn, jumps out of the car, grabs the flag, and puts it in the car. And we drive back. So I said, "Man, why did you do that?" And he's going back. I said to him something about, you know, I mean, hundreds, thousands of your own people were killed because of this flag. Why are you rescuing the flag? And he said, because thousands of people also fought and died under this flag. Mm-hmm. And more Native Americans died in the service of the United States wars fighting for America than any other ethnic group per capita in the country, which is true. And so it was this really kind of really interesting disposition. We got it back to my daughter's house, and one of my first father-in-law was African-American, said, I remember he always, whenever we got there, something happened on TV, and the anthem came up, he would always stand up. And one day I said, "But Willie, why are you standing up, you know, every time the flag comes on?" He did that for Lift Every Voice, but he also did it when the flag came on, because he was a World War II veteran, and it was because no matter what this flag has done badly to us, he said, "A lot of my brothers died under that flag." So it's a complex thing. So that's why I keep that flag hanging in my study. You know, it made me think of that.
It's wonderful. I mean, yeah, Sheila B. Wright in a recent interview just said, out of all the different perspectives that she got from photographing people for the installation, she said, no matter what better place to be to express your dissent than in America, considering our global, you know, the context of conflict and war that we see around the world, you know, this is really a unique place because of that dichotomy.
This is the music installation of For Whom It Stands. I've been working on this for quite some time.
That was beatbox and multimedia artist Shodika.
And as you can see, there are 15 different selections here. Everything from Destiny's Child, Jose Feliciano, Baltimore's own Ethel Ennis, and her performance of the Star-Spangled Banner for Richard Nixon's re-inauguration in 1973.
Oh, I forgot she did that. That's right.
That's right. And she made a really interesting point by choosing to gracefully reject accompaniment from any form of military orchestration, and she did it a cappella as a way of personalizing her performance of the anthem, not just for herself, but also for all those listening. So... press on the selection here.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight.
So I tried to add as many layers as I could to this installation. For example, this contribution here, the selection here, it doesn't end with this recorded performance. Go to the interview section, and we have Ethel Ennis here at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, actually, talking about her interpretation of the Star-Spangled Banner.
When I was asked to do the anthem for the re-inauguration, I pondered on that. I said, here I am a Democrat, and here they asking me to sing the anthem. So I called all my wonderful political friends of Baltimore. I say, now, how do I work this? How do I do this?
I really tried to get away from the default culture of the national anthem as much as possible. We have the anthem sung in other languages, New Stolen Hymnal, the Spanish version, the Star Spangled Banner, the anthem sung in the language of Lakota by Lorna and Her Many Horses.
Singing in Lakota?
That's right. We have, of course, Hendrix's version, and there's a...
Right.
Actually, there's a little bit of a treasure hunt in this as well. I'm hoping to expand it also, but with the Hendrix selection and the Marvin Gaye section selection here, there's a mini arc within. And, of course, there's the interview. You might find this interesting. Hendrix on the Dick Cavett Show following his performance on Woodstock, at Woodstock.
What was the controversy about the national anthem and the way
I don't know. All I did was play it. I'm American, so I played it. I used to have to sing it in school. They made me sing it in school, so it's a flashback. You know, I don't know about it.
This man was in the 101st Airborne, so when you write your nasty letters in...
Sorry. Wow, right.
When you mention the national anthem and talk about playing it in any unorthodox way, you immediately get a guaranteed percentage of hate mail from people who say, how dare
anyone. That's not unorthodox.
It isn't unorthodox?
No, I thought it was beautiful.
So I was also looking to push the conversation as much as I could here. I've also found that there's a lot of, there are some attempts to express reconciliation and rebellion all at the same time. Sometimes those two things are inseparable. Case in point, Renee Marie's version of the Star Spangled Banner. Sing and lift up your voice and sing to the tune of the national anthem.
Oh, yeah.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring with a harmony of liberty. Let our rejoicings rise high as the listening.
You know, I've also found in my research that, well, I believe that we don't just internalize music or something as powerful as the legacy of the Star Spangled Banner. We don't just internalize this song intellectually or emotionally, but I believe we internalize them physiologically as well. And so I have to imagine the amount of willpower that it took for her to push through what she's internalized regarding the Star Spangled Banner and then fuse it with the African American national anthem.
Well, I love what you've done with this. This is pretty amazing. It really is. I mean, one needs to sit here and just listen to each piece and go through it.
I did that last week with some guests of mine. We went through every selection here.
Yeah.
And afterwards, we needed to go and have a drink because we were just emotionally spent.
Yeah.
March on till victory is won.
And then they clap.
Yeah.
One of my favorite selections here is the Marvin Gaye selection. Now, this is how he presented the anthem in 1979, Larry Holmes versus Ernie Shavers.
Yeah, I remember.
Somewhat standard, not so much, because it's Marvin Gaye. He's going to take his own approach.
You see by the dawn's early light.
1983, Marvin Gaye, NBA All-Star Game. Inglewood, California.
Can you see by the dawn's early light?
Skip ahead to 2004. Nona Gay, his daughter, and Marvin Gaye's performance from 1983 playing in the background. So this is a anthem duet within the Marvin Gaye legacy. this is more about the gay legacy than it is about the anthem. You know, it's been personalized by a very special family.
Because he'd already passed.
Right.
Say, can you see?
And I think it's something special when what you put together here is when communities in America, historically oppressed in this country, interpret the song.
Yes.
In any number of ways. I mean, that it lends to the beauty and the contradictions that exist that are all wrapped around. You can't separate them out.
Right.
You know?
They have to reconcile with where they are and rebel at the same time.
We walked over to For Whom It Stands sister exhibition, For Whom It Stands 2, located right next door at the Star Spangled Banner Flag House in Baltimore.
My name is Amanda Davis. I'm the executive director of the Star Spangled Banner Flag House, and we're standing in the Maryland House Education and Cultural Arts Resource Center, and we are hosting the companion exhibit For Whom It Stands 2. This is the first partnership that the Flag House has entered into with the Reginald, who are our direct next-door neighbors, so we're very excited to have all of this community artwork here, especially in the birthplace of the Star Spangled Banner, where really the most famous American flag was created, and to have all this great American flag imagery is really special to us, especially in this bicentennial year.
So, and we're here with one of the artists.
I'm Gina Pierleone, and I'm a mixed media artist, and I am so excited to be part of this exhibit. Mm-hmm. So excited. So
tell us, what did you do here? This is the piece, right?
This is my piece. It's called Untitled Flag, and it's not untitled because I couldn't think of anything. I thought about ownership and representation, and Untitled seemed to be the best way to kind of put that forth. I've thought a lot about flags in terms of them being handmade, so this is made out of several different pieces of paper that are carefully put together, lots of layering, lots of not stitching per se, but marking with paint to represent things like that. And I started a series of flag pieces because a friend of mine moved to New York in September of 2001. And she was excited to be in New York City, and then September 11th happened, and she didn't know anybody. So I took the bus up on the 13th, and it was, I'm from right outside of New York City, so I've spent a lot of time in New York City. And it was New York like I've never seen it before, and flags were everywhere. There were lots of flags and lots of faces of missing people. And those images kept coming back and back, and it was very emotional. I've never thought emotionally about our flag until then, and I've never particularly felt connected to it. It's not that visually interesting to me, you know, compared to other, you know, flags of other countries. So I came back and thought, oh, I'm not going to make flag paintings, am I? But, you know, as an artist, we get these compulsions and these ideas and these questions. And one of the ways for me to figure out how I feel about things is by visually putting things together and just experimenting. So over the course of several years, I made flag paintings. And with this one, I thought a lot about who it represented, and I thought a lot about words that were representational or words that were oppositional. So I started making stamps that said us, which also doubled as US, mm-hmm. us, me, them, and you. And some of them are inclusive and some of them are not. So I really thought a lot about who was represented. And as we're, you know, I mean, my grandparents aren't from around here, and a lot of people's aren't, and a lot of people are, you know, first generation or brand new to here. So my question still is, who does it represent? What voice does it represent? And then as, you know, I always think about what surprises me about pieces, and let me show you.
Sure. Please.
as you and them run together, youth showed up. And I thought, oh, well, there's a missing segment of ownership of the flag. And when we looked at the photographs in the other museum, you know, young people being covered by the flag, not wanting to show themselves or not wanting it to represent them or feeling bound by the flag, I think that that's a group that I'm glad was invited in to express themselves, because it's very different than, you know, your former father-in-law or other people who feel a national pride. It's a huge discussion. It's huge, and it's very emotional.
So as an artist, I'm curious what you think of the amalgam of these two exhibits together.
Thank goodness for that. It says to me that the flag isn't an intellectual debate or discussion or symbol. It's much more like this. It's much, much more emotional. And it's a great place for us to have a big discussion. Who is it? You know, what part of we? Is it all of us? That's what I would ask. Does it represent all of us?
Right.
And the constant stream of people that are still becoming Americans or wanting to be Americans. Does it represent all of us?
How do we get to we?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think if we eliminate them from the discussion, then we can slide in. And if we embrace all of the sounds that we heard, all of the ways of singing the national anthem, they're not all talking about the same thing, and they're all part of we. They're all part of it. So I think that this is it's a brilliant idea. It's a brilliant idea, and it's brilliant also and so heartfelt to anchor the exhibit on one young woman who probably thought that she didn't make a difference to anybody. She didn't even own herself.
Right.
And all of this is really built on her showing up.
I have a piece upstairs that I wanted to share with you as well.
That was beatbox and multimedia artist Shodika. Come up to the top and take a look in the mirror. The last piece you see as you walk down.
That was a piece that was contributed by Rara, the photographer, Ryan Stevenson. And basically, this was part of a photo shoot series that we did in one day. And we spent hours, mostly in post, figuring out what are we going to do with these. We came up with these triptych photographs, and this is just one of them. There are three total, and then each one is broken down into a singular photograph as well that stands on its own. But basically, this was an illustration of me doing inventory of what I've internalized regarding the national anthem, the American flag, American ideologies, American history. What parts have I internalized that have been good for me? What parts have made me ill over the years and over the decades? Basically, I did a lot of soul searching, and this photo series helps to capture that. And as you see here, there's me in the center, listening to my own heartbeat with a stethoscope, and then to the right and the left of me are other versions of my being. One being blinded by flag blinders, so to speak, holding the desk flags, the Confederate flag and the Union flag upside down, and then to the right, the flag over my mouth, and then the Confederate flag folded in half. That was the only way to sort of challenge the texture, the symbolic texture and the ideological texture of the Confederate flag by folding it in half, because, you know, if you turn it upside down, the X still exists. That was Ryan's concept as well. And as you can see, it's printed on metal, so your reflection shows up in the image as you look at it, as a way of inspiring those who look at it and experience it to beg the question for themselves, hopefully. What have you perhaps internalized as an American? Mm-hmm. Or even as someone who's not from the States, you know, how do American ideologies through foreign policy, through American media, American film, literature, and so on and so forth, how does that affect your place in this world, on this planet? So,
last thing you see.
Yeah.
And here's assistant curator Asantewa Boakua once again.
This concept came, For Whom It Stands Too, through an open call. So the museum held an open call for artwork and artifacts, actually, from citizens in their own personal collection. So we arrived with over 100 submissions of art from around the country, as far as Reno, Nevada, as well, of course, as a lot of local and regional mm-hmm. artists. And so the idea behind this show is, again, highlighting those untold stories, right? Thinking of Grace Wisher as the touch point. And some of the artists in this show are professional full-time working artists. Others are not. So the idea to expound upon what we introduce at the Reginald Lewis and to specifically focus on art, Dr. Wilkins's research, the highlight of it is the flag art and looking at how artists have used the flag over time. So we wanted to explore it here. And in this space, too, at the historic site, I think gives it another level of emotion that Gina spoke to. So that's what we attempted to do here.
In the flag house.
Yes, in the flag house. Yeah.
This is an amazing thing that these two institutions put together. I think this is a...
It's been a wonderful... Yeah. Yeah. Partnership for us to come together on.
We've so much enjoyed having everybody from the Reginald here, and I think that the overwhelming community response has been great. We've had visitors from Reginald come and see the exhibit here, and then we've had people who are just walking in to see our space become interested in this once they learn it's here, and I think that it really, as everyone's pointed out, gives everybody some food for thought.
How long will these exhibits be up?
This one through September 14th, and the Reginald Lewis through February 28th, 2015. And we will be relaunching September 10th. There will be new objects introduced into the show at the Reginald Lewis Museum, commemorating the 15 Stars and Stripes of the Star-Spangled Banner flag. So there will be new works on display and 15 identified as stellar works that we really want to draw the public's attention to.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
You don't want to miss this exhibition. It explores parts of our history never before explored in this depth or in this audiovisual way, all in one place. You leave the exhibition with a new understanding of the American flag and its history. For more information on For Whom It Stands, the flag and the American people, the exhibition featured now at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture, visit rflewismuseum.org. On your way to break... We hear Year of the Boomerang by Rage Against the Machine. It's the birthday of Brad Wilk, drummer in that band.